Welcome to the Bitcoin Nova. Today I'm here with Mauro. Mauro's going to be talking to me about 5D economics in Bitcoin and their connection. Hi, Mauro.
Hi, Stacey. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to have you on and talk more about all of your ideas that are just going to expand all of the thoughts that I've been having, because there's just so many things that I think about Bitcoin and I have so many deep thoughts, and I wonder, just there's so much like philosophical kind of ways you can go with Bitcoin. And I feel like when we first met on X, the things that I was saying, you knew exactly what I was talking about, except you are studying these things. So I think it's amazing. I'm so happy to have you here. This is just like, you're my soul sister. You know, it's like we called each other.
We established that like day one. For sure. And a confirmation to that, I'll say, I mean, you already know, I don't do this, and I actually haven't done any media, or I avoid it as often as I can. And I've never even said yes to any, especially like a video recording. And you already know I'm not active on social media. I'm just starting to like get my book out there and advertise it. And I've never said yes to anybody except you. So you have to know that I couldn't say no to you.
Oh, that's so
sweet. This is my first, as well as yours, which is so awesome.
And it was so amazing to see that, because of the community that we're part of on X. It's amazing to see that there's people that have so many great ideas that I am so happy we're uncovering and actually talking to each other more, because things that you have been studying and you have been thinking about, it feels like you're on your own sometimes, right? Like you have these thoughts and nobody really gets it.
And we have been.
And we have been alone. And it feels like for you to be able to just see that this community is real and you're not just spending your time on social media and wasting your time, you're actually able to create these connections that actually have meaning. And to be able to have people that understand you is just amazing. I'm just so happy that we found each other and the whole group, like everybody's found each other. So
likewise.
Yeah, we're just like supporting and growing
together. It really is a gravitationally strong group. Like it really is.
And yeah, so it's like just getting to know you is going to be really amazing. So we're going to start off with getting to know you a little bit better, and then I want to get into talking more about Bitcoin and the 5D economics. So I want to ask you about your background. Where are you from? Like, your name is Mauro. It's a pretty unique name. Can you tell us about yourself?
Well, I mean, I love that we're starting with personal questions, because I'm always speaking professionally and I never do this part, and I was expecting it to be just technical. So this is really a good way to break the ice for sure. But yeah, it's Armenian background. I was actually born and raised there. Moved to Toronto when I was 8, and this is where I'm at now.
I didn't know you lived in Armenia, and you were born there. That's
yes.
Amazing. Yeah, I was born here, but my parents are from Greece. So I'm first generation.
Okay. Yeah. And when did your parents move?
Oh, they were young. My mom left when she was about your age, you know, so she was pretty young. But do you remember any of it, or do you feel like
absolutely. Yeah. And we do go back often. It's such a dichotomy. And I mean, especially now that we're in Bitcoin, and Bitcoin really opens up the doors to freedom of abundance. Everything that I'm doing now, like, I wouldn't have the freedom to research and, you know, be in a lab and go down any rabbit holes if I didn't have the freedom to do that, if I didn't have to, you know, go work a day to day 3D. So that has really allowed me to have a level of freedom that is honestly, I'll say, I don't know what word to use, but it's not just unheard of, it's very uncommon in my culture. It's not typical for a girl of my age, you know, to be in the entrepreneur life, to do the conferences and or just spend most of my time doing research. So I really owe it to my father mostly, and my parents, for allowing me that opportunity first and foremost. I was born a year after the Soviet Union collapsed. So my dad was definitely the thing that, like, he was the reason that we shifted, paradigm shifted genetically, I'll say. You know how now we're like, we're going to change this for our future generations, and any inner healing work that we do and outer abundance that it reflects in, we're doing it for our future generation. That paradigm shift, definitely my father started it to even get us out of survival mode that he was always in. And I always joke that I've been researching fifth dimensional economics, and I've been writing my thesis since 2018. And just last year I made a joke and I'm like, wait, I've been writing this and researching this for so many years, and I'm realizing it's just like an autobiography of my father, because he's really the one that already got me out of the 3D into a 5D state from Armenia mm-hmm. to here.
Yeah, and the 3D state, pretty much from what I get, it means that, and for people that don't know, the 3D world is the world we're living in, the world that that we spend our time, you know, everything around us is 3D. So the 5D is like the almost like enlightenment path, right? It's like you're in a higher dimension, like you're growing spiritually, and your mind is growing, and you're not worrying so much about physical things, you know, I think.
Exactly. I'd love to go break down the dimensions, especially when it comes to talking about 5D economics, so we understand what we're working with. But that is accurate. I mean, I can save that for later once we get through the personal.
Okay. And the one thing I think what you mentioned about your family coming to America to give you a better life and to give you the life that you're able to have right now, to be able to study and have the freedom to do it. Because if you were working nonstop, if you stayed in the country you were born in, you wouldn't have that freedom. You'd have to work, you know, more, and you wouldn't have this opportunity. Mm-hmm. So the way that our parents, like my parents and your parents, left their homeland to come to America was, America was the land of freedom. It was the new way that they could start a better beginning for their kids. You know, they wanted to give their kids a better life. So I feel like when it comes to Bitcoin, it reminds me of what you said, because I think of Bitcoin as the new America. So it's like, we're exiting this land that we were born into and this 3D world of America. And we're going to a new dimension. We're going to Bitcoin, which is like the escape hatch into a new world where we don't have to follow these rules. We don't have to stick with this place, what we were given. We can move to a new zone and prosper, you know. So that's.
And it's, you know, Bitcoin is the first time we've ever been able to separate currency from state. So mm-hmm. just even having that option is in itself prosperity. And I always say it's just the difference from going from survival mode to thrive mode.
Uh-huh. Yes. And that's the thing. It's like you with Bitcoin, you get to spend more time as Bitcoin grows, you keep saving your money in Bitcoin, and it allows you more free time to do the things you want to do, because you're not just hustling for fiat currency that's debased constantly and you can't keep up with life.
Mm-hmm. Well, we always say, you don't buy Bitcoin, you're escaping fiat, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think that's just such, you're always discovering new things. Like, I feel mm-hmm. like, just like how you love to learn. I don't think even as much time as I've studied Bitcoin, I feel like people that don't understand it would think of me as very well knowledged and think that I know everything, but you really don't know everything. And it takes, that's why Bitcoin's amazing, because you don't just understand it and say, okay, I'm done learning. Like, there's so many connections. It infiltrates every part of our life. And
right.
It's not that I think money is important. I don't care about money. I care about like the way that money or fiat affects so many parts of life. You know, it affects like from a base layer of life, like it affects people. It causes socioeconomic shifts, you know, mm-hmm. It causes people to be depressed because they can't make ends meet, you know? So it's like a lot of hardships come from society not being abundant, you know? So that's just a huge problem with fiat. And Bitcoin starts, it's not just, I want to be rich. It's you need the system to change to create change amongst society.
Exactly. And you will never meet a non-passionate Bitcoiner, right? And if you look at what the technology is, if you look at like under the hood and into the blockchain, it's really just a ledger, right? It's a list of things that is encrypted. That is the extension of what Bitcoin is. But like you said, the manifestation of what that could do, that's where everyone's passion comes from, because it's so revolutionary that you can remove pretty much any intermediate and any third party, whether it's time, whether it's distance. And that's another reason why we say it's higher dimensional, right? Because it is outside of time. There is no delay. It is outside of distance. There's no limitation in terms of banks and borders.
I love that. I love that there's like how it transcends the 3D world. It transcends like how you said, distance is a huge one, because you try to leave the country with cash, you can't, leave with much cash, but you can't just take money with you everywhere. And if you do try to send money anywhere, the distance is a problem, because now you're paying some intermediary to, they have to take a chunk of that money as a payment. So it's like Bitcoin bypasses the distance. You can instantly transact with this network that's global, and it's connected, and it's powered by, I'm amazed by the amount of power that goes behind it as well. Like, I think every time I try to imagine the amount of power that secures the Bitcoin network, that's what we're doing. We're putting our money into our fiat into a shield that is defense mode against any government who wants to try to corrupt it or to steal from it. So it's not that. Another thing I think about, I don't know if you what you think about this too, but myself, they th I think we consider ourselves like paranoid Bitcoin anarchists, and I think that's the reason we call ourselves that is because we feel like everyone else thinks we're paranoid because we study Bitcoin and understand it, because they think we don't trust. But it's true, we are paranoid in that way. But I also think that people think that we just hate government employees so much, and I don't hate anybody. Like, I'm not against government employees. They're regular people like me and you, but I just think the people in charge of these governments are the problem, and the people that make the rules are able to break the rules, and that's the thing we're fighting against.
And you know what? It's, of course, it's a debt-based system. It's not designed to benefit the consumer.
They're always looking out for themselves, and it shows when we've seen. I think the wealth gap is a major orange pilling moment for people too, when they see that this wealth gap is growing wider, and the people that benefit are the ones on top. And I like to say about how Bitcoin levels the playing field, and that's what it feels like. But let me see. I wanted to ask you about your journey between how did you evolve into studying 5D economics? What were your interests over time? Like, when you started, was it something that shaped you? Like, obviously you said you wrote your thesis, and it had a lot to do with your father, because everything that he went through growing up, and he came here to escape the world that you guys were living in. And so how did that intersect and shape your studies? Like, how did you get to Bitcoin?
And this is, again, I feel like I'm gonna talk more about my dad in this than myself. But he growing up, he always taught us that anytime you chase after anything, you're going to continually stay in a state of chase. And if you stay still and follow your passion and are true to yourself and true to your purpose, then money will chase you. Now, of course, as children in high school, we didn't really understand what he meant. And now, with quantum mechanics and with metaphysics, we know that that's literally and physically true. So I never really, of course, understood the depth of it. But even at one point, my mom was like, no, like you have to go into being a lawyer or a doctor or, you know, something that can have a higher chance of ROI. And my dad was like, no, so you have to do what you love the most. And what I love the most was Beethoven. And I went into classical music, and my brother went into philosophy, pretty much the lowest income occupations you could possibly imagine, but we were doing what we loved.
Yeah, you loved it.
Right, and it was, I think, the last year of university of my fine arts degree, and I've always just had a very curious nature. I've always been going down different rabbit holes. I heard about Bitcoin, and I think it was end of 2014, 2015. And of course, I spent the first 3 months being skeptical, as everyone is and should be, before I really got into the chain and the mathematics of it all, and how it's trusting in math and not into centralized leadership and all that. And I fell in love with the technology so much so that I felt like I had to just drop what I'm doing and participate in a way more so than just buying and holding. Like, yes, when I found out about it, and I always tell this story, and it's silly, but I'll tell you guys. I was in my dorm at university, and I kind of had that aha moment, that paradigm shifting, like, this is what abundance will look like in 3D. That was very revolutionary for me, and I felt like a billionaire internally. I felt like I was just resonating wealth with this knowledge. And I remember I had to go get like allergy pills or something, and I think I had like $87 in my student loans account. And I'm going, and there's a little girl next to the cashier with her mom. She's crying because she can't get both toys. Her mom was only saying basically that you can get one of them. And I remember getting her the second toy and not getting myself the medicine that I needed, because that I just felt like infinite abundance right then and there. Like, that transaction was worth far more than any currency. And that's kind of the mindset that I've been functioning in ever since. And I taught myself how to code. I applied to the School of Engineering, but they were like, "You're a fine arts student. What are you doing here? Get out of here." And I had to petition and appeal, and I taught myself how to code, and I ended up getting into the first blockchain development program. I got the highest mark in the course, and everybody else was an engineer. Okay, I'm the only pianist. And originally, they were telling me not to do it. And at the time, there was pretty much 10 smart contract developers in Canada, because it was such a new thing. Nobody really knew what they were doing. And my very first startup, I ended up, my business partner was the professor of the course. So it's just been a blockchain entrepreneur ever since, really.
So I think that I love all of that, and I think that what you're saying about being a pianist and then getting into the path that you did and being so intelligent, it's interesting because I've always thought that classical music, I used to play classical music in my kids' rooms when they were little for bedtime, because
That's
I've heard that
incredible.
it expands your mind, and learn to love classical music too. And I feel like classical music also follows this, like, I feel like sound is so important because sound creates this energy in you. And the sound that you hear when you hear classical music, it's like a lot of music, but I feel like it starts off slow, like, and it reminds you of life because it starts off slow and then it builds up and then there's a crash. And then it builds up again, and then it's like this like peace, you know. So I feel like it reminds you of when you listen to it, like how life goes, like the build up, the crashes, the excitement, you know, there's like highs and lows, and it's like a wave, it's like an ocean, you know. And I think a lot of music has that same pattern, but when you see patterns everywhere, I just love to like connect it all and to see how that
So
is.
the reason classical music does that is because prior to, and this is prior to 1800 Enlightenment, classical music, Baroque music, and times of Beethoven, automatically any music that was produced on a musical instrument would resonate at 432 hertz. So every single Beethoven sonata, symphony that you hear is tuned to 432 hertz, which is Earth's magnetic field. And you're saying a music is the sound is the basis of everything, and we go back to dimensions. Spinning sound is why we have matter.
I heard something about, because okay, if you could elaborate this too, because spinning sound, it's like you have these shapes in nature, like you mentioned before when we were in a space, how you have a triangle, and then if you up like flip the triangle upside down and then you spin it really fast, that's matter, that's physics, right? And then when you have sound waves, something about sound waves crashing, like hitting each other, creates matter, or I think,
Yeah.
I don't know if that if that's what you think.
I mean, deconstructive interference is what creates matter. So, yes, the collapse of the wave function is the leftover matter that we see of the resonance. And the resonance itself is a gradient of light. Like, we're only seeing 1% of that light, which is visible light. So we're already n not seeing 99.9% of what's there. We're already left over with the surface level of whatever looks like matter.
Yes.
Right.
I think you mentioned that before too, because now that you're saying it, I remember you mentioning that, and I think that blew my mind too, because we don't realize that what we see in this 3D world that we live in is only 1% of what's really out there. So when you think about thoughts and manifesting realities and how you're what level you're vibrating at and like what kind of energy you're bringing into your life, when you think about being at that vibration, you're creating these, even listening to the music that brings that vibration into you, that level is like is creating thoughts, and those thoughts create actions, and then it kind of shapes your world.
And again, I always take this back to dimensional evolution. I would love to do maybe another space just on this. I've been meaning to open up like a 5D economics community, but essentially, in 0D, we'll say that you're a void. It's the vacuum. So it's not that there's nothing, it's that there's lack of nothing.
I like it.
You're getting excited. I love it. And you can say a continuum of no space-time, when you have evolution from a 0D to a 1D, which is essentially a point that you can observe, a singular observable point. That's where you start to have, and not to sound controversial, because I feel like I need more time to break this down, but that's where you have some, that's where you, that is the first, you can say, genesis of mineral consciousness. That's where you can say rock formations live in. And if the rock is randomly scattered in a molecular structure, then we'll just call that a random rock off the streets. But if it's crystallized and it's organized and its structure is doubled, then it we'll call it a quartz crystal. And you can say that a rock that is crystalline is higher dimensional than a rock that has unorganized matter. Right?
Yeah,
Am I making
so
sense?
yes, you are, 'cause I was thinking that I think you are making sense, 'cause what I'm thinking in my way of like interpreting what you're saying is point one, the void. Then you go to point two and you're able to observe, like, so if consciousness is exiting the void and going out into the 3D world and beyond, you're starting off at the void. You have the first point, then the second point creates a triangle, right? So you have the 3 points, the origin, the first point, and so the triangle is literally the shape where we now are in the 3D world, and that's why you mentioned everything being triangles, like, and then you from that 3D point you're able to observe. So that's why it's like this 3D world that we live in is this creation, and we from this point can observe the world around us. And that's why sometimes when people think we're all connected and our consciousness is connected, is because if we are all have some sort of starting point, and I know this is getting away from Bitcoin, but I know that like I like to think a lot of stuff is connected anyway.
Of course.
But you know, you come here, we're all parts of this origin, and we all see each other from a, it's like we're fractals of a diamond or something, like we're all mirrors of each other. And Bitcoin, the network, which is pretty much like every person that's using the network, every miner that's mining the Bitcoin, everyone that's using this network, our minds are all then connected. And that's like, we all care about this thing that now is protected by the energy that that defends it. So that's why we are so passionate about it, because we're putting our time and our energy together and we're working towards something that nobody can take away from us. And it's backed by the energy. So when people don't think it's backed. But I think, yeah, that observation where we observe everything around us, and then now it's like we are part of this network that's outside this 3D world. So it's just,
well, we are constantly mimicking nature, right, to a very high degree, and consciousness is doing the same thing on a microcosmic and a macrocosmic, and the technology does the same thing, and so do our desires, so does our level of fear and greed. So the fact that this technology has even manifested and exists in our 3D system as a method to bootstrap to a far more open source and distributed decentralized economy means that we are ready to participate in that, because that's exactly what we're reflecting right now.
That's so cool. That's what we're reflecting right now. I love that. So yeah, we're reflecting pretty much what the world was reflecting back when, you know, first when the money got the fiat got taken off the gold standard, then our fiat currency was debased more and more over time.
Mm-hmm.
Then people as a whole started to come together to, even when it started with Henry Ford discussing energy money. And after that, there was cryptocurrency, you know, channels where there was studies and cryptographers that they were posting and learning and trying to figure out this energy money. And it took many, many years of research, starting from maybe the 70s. And I feel like I've talked about this even before, but I'll mention it again. But then when we got to the point where society and humans just got fed up with what was going on with fiat currency, since it got taken off some sort of, you know, basis off of what money is, then Satoshi came along, and Satoshi decided, you know, which I think is just incredible, because he or she or them or whatever decided to finally figure out the last pieces of this puzzle at a time where it was the great financial crisis and everybody was a mess, you know, and we needed to come together and bring something about that would change the trajectory of finance, because we were headed down a very dark path. And if we didn't have Bitcoin as this escape hatch, we would really be in a lot of trouble financially, because there would be no way to get us out of this. It would literally be a two wealth system. It would be wealthy and poor, like, eventually. It just, right, that's what it would be.
Right. So, and that's why I always say, like, this is the greatest wealth transfer opportunity in history. And the average shelf life of a country currency is give or take about 30 years before it starts falling into greed and inflation. And it's the American market. It's the most advertised internationally, I'll say. So we're like 10 years extended into this very silent recession that, every day more and more we're seeing inflation.
Yeah, it's true. And I think the reason that's lasted this long is even because it is a global, like, we became that whole globalization where the US dollar became a debt. Like, we learned about, oh, let's have credit and credit markets. And that's why we were thinking, oh, this is another way to extend the currency further. Not only are they debasing it and adding more zeros to the system, it's not like they're printing it manually, but they're just punching a number in a computer. But then they're also creating debt out of it, you know? So it's like this collapse, it's like a bubble that's ready to burst, you know? So it's just crazy to think that.
And that
people don't think about it.
That goes right into my thesis. And every time we speak, we always come back to we're saying the same thing. But essentially, it's the most obvious 3D economic sign is that is how money is created, is the debt-based system that we're in right now. And, you know, anytime a bank lends money into existence or the Federal Reserve creates more money, it comes with a corresponding amount of debt, right? So that debt has interest on it, and the interest is always greater than the original amount. So we're in this rat race of never having enough money. So essentially, it throws people into competition for not enough money, and that is the basis of economic greed. And the problem with banking system is that if a bank is going to lend to a business or a personal loan, they're going to give it to somebody that's going to create new goods and services. And every time that we're creating a new good and service in the economy, I feel like you're essentially removing yourself from nature, because you have to take something that was once natural, you have to take something that we once did for free, and you have to figure out a way to sell it back to someone. And the more we come up with services to sell, the further away we get from nature, and then the wealth gap gets larger and larger, because the bank is only going to fund the people that are paying them back. And a really good example of this is the Bank of Dave. I don't know if you've heard of him, and it's actually a Netflix. There's a Netflix documentary, or no, it's a movie, but it's based on a true story. I highly recommend people watch it. It's such an interesting watch. Essentially, it's about this guy, Dave. I don't know where he's from. I don't want to say incorrect information, but I really don't know. I want to say somewhere around North England, I believe. Yeah. But essentially, he's just a good guy in the community. He has, I think, a couple of like a trucking franchise or an RV. Again, I'm not sure, but he has maybe some money, but nothing crazy. But he slowly is lending and just helping his friends out, just giving money wherever we need. Like, my dad on a regular basis sends money back home. Like, it's not even... nobody thinks to count interest on money that is for our friends and family. Yeah. And Dave does that so much that he essentially creates his own community. And everybody is telling him that you should create a bank, because the community ends up profiting and prospering more than the loans that Dave was handing out. Now, the best part about the story is that Dave actually applied for a banking license. And as you know, this is exclusive to the Federal Reserve, right? They don't, in 150 years, I think, they have never given out, they have never approved a banking license to this day. They still haven't.
I didn't know that.
And it's a really funny and very, very just witty and clever how the community brought together to support this. And he got the license approved. So to this day, it's the only local running decentralized bank, essentially, that is not owned by the Federal Reserve. Most of it goes back to the community. It's self-sustaining. Like, that is in itself 5D economics. When I always say, call Michelle our masternode, that's essentially what it is, right? It's the leader of the community that is confirming the transactions, as Michelle does. And that's what Dave acts as. So instead of in a 3D finance where we have centralized banks, of course, money comes from one source. Not only will we have a different definition of currency, different definition of what we consider money, because it's going to be used far more as a communication of value and less as a currency, I'll say, in a 5D economy. And that communication, that transaction, will not be limited to fiat. And then when you have community leaders like the Bank of Dave that acts as masternodes, confirming the transactions all around the block, that's essentially what a 5D finance would look like on chain, on a distributed ledger.
That reminds me. So Michelle, that you mentioned, Michelle, she is the leader or one of the leaders of the Bitcoin Army on our communities on X. So she is this masternode that you're talking about. And one thing that you mentioned one time when we were speaking on X was that you said that what represent like what a 5D economy is sometimes what we are doing by connecting with each other is like the knowledge that is exchanged and the communication that is exchanged is
Transaction.
the value. That's the transaction, that's the
That's the
value.
transaction. That's the value, right?
And that I thought was just a crazy idea when you mentioned that. I thought that was, I was like, wow, it's not just us talking. This is actually value because we're spending. Let's say, okay, people say Bitcoin is time all the time, right? That's what Bitcoin is, because Bitcoin is saving your time that you spend working. So when you spend your time in whichever social media or 3D world, I think some people call it the analog world, when wherever you choose to spend your time, you're spending that currency. So your time is your
Exactly.
currency. That's insane.
Exactly. And you know what? The only currency, it's the only currency where you never know the balance.
Yes.
Right? And that's
And
why it's.
yeah, and I think that that's what I think Bitcoin would be is like if you know when people say that the people that have the like a lot of Bitcoin once it keeps rising and rising and takes off into this hyper Bitcoinization type stage where fiat can't catch up and the price just runs away. It's really just and it's really not just Bitcoin's price rising, it's the dollar being or fiat currency being so destabilized that it falls, so Bitcoin looks like it's rising. But the thing that I think that's what would shape these future communities would be people that let's say like in our community now, the people it's really a mirror of what would happen because these master nodes in these communities. The way that we want to show other people's voices and have them be heard, like you, who you were so intelligent and have so much to offer, and you weren't speaking out about it. You were quiet. You were just kind of observing. And then now you're active and you're talking. It's like people that are the master nodes, they use their excess currency, let's say it is, to bring up other people and to show their voice off. So it's the same idea as if Bitcoin, when the price rises so much that the people who have the most will give back to the community. So
Of
it's the same.
course.
It just mirrors what we're doing with our communities on X
I
and what
mean,
helps.
look at Smash by Saturdays.
Yeah, I know.
It's
Smash by Saturdays.
it really is becoming its own bank.
Oh, Lior. Hi, Angelina. That's my little girl. She wanted to stop in and say hi.
Angelina.
She says hello from the other room.
A big part of doing blockchain solutions or any type of consulting or development was education, because it was such an early time that people really didn't know why they needed it. It was just kind of a buzzword and everybody wanted to jump back on. So most of the time I spent convincing companies they don't need a token, but they can still use, chain. And when I was writing a little curriculum that it was kind of my introduction to new clients, usually they were businesses and commercial clients. I was writing why they need it, how it works and how it can scale their business. And as I was writing these chapters, I kind of naturally progressed to a chapter where I started making the connections between the economy as well as the blockchain, and then quantum physics and the blockchain and nature and the blockchain, and slowly these metaphysical theories started to birth out of a very mathematical technology, and they started to do the comparisons. And it was so fascinating to me, and I was so excited to, I guess, have an audience to talk to this about. And of course, I taught that chapter to absolutely no one, let alone the third party centralized businesses. And it ended up becoming the topic of my book. So my thesis is really simple. My thesis is that blockchain technology will act as a catalyst to create a higher dimensional economy. So when we're talking about you were saying how we're moving from, a triangle to, of course, 5D is circular, it has no points. It's really the difference between I'm saying economy, but I want, every single time I use the word economy, I want it to be interchangeable with self, because the external will never change if the inner self doesn't. So even if we're reflecting it back into self, because in 5D there's no outside or inside, right? It's all unification of one thing. So we'd be going from a stagnant movement, whether that's internal or whether that's manifested in our economy, to something that's much more dynamic. And it's like we're going from a particle state that is observed and it functions off of time and causality to a wave state, to quantum probability, where the only existence is the now that is observed. And I know this is like music to our ears. I know this is our bread and butter. And you were saying earlier about how what you're seeing, like what we perceive, is such little of what there actually is. And in addition to that, like I'm in my lab right now. I mean, it's a mess, but maybe another time we'll give you a lab tour. But
is there a chalkboard in the back?
There's a little whiteboard, yes.
Oh, nice.
I'm in my lab, which means there's an x-axis, a y-axis, and volume. So I'm in the third dimension, you can say. However, it feels external to me, but it's really an internal reflection outwards, because your eyes are also facing outwards, right? Even your retinas look within and then they push an image outwards. So right now, the blackboard that you're looking at, in my reality, it's literally not there. It's only there because you're observing it. Now, by the time I turn my head and I look at it, it would have already rendered visible to my observation, only because matter renders at the speed of light, and my speed of thought is slower than the speed of light. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So it kind of like beats me to the punch of mm-hmm. existing the second before the collapse functions. So when we're talking about a 5D state of living, it's kind of in that state of oscillation, zeros and ones. This is the difference between even a regular computer and a quantum computer. It's the land of probability, so you can be in multiple states at once. And that is what's really going to get us out of the survival. Can I eat that? Can I mate with that? And is that going to give me resources to, how can I collaborate instead of competition, instead of greed? How can we use each other? It's all about dynamic movement, as I was saying, because the difference in dimensionality is always in awareness. So in 5D, you and I know very well that you are me and I am you and you're just another me. And we love having these conversations personally mm-hmm. because we have that awareness, and that in itself creates mm-hmm. quantum entanglement. So I can't evolve if you don't evolve with me. Mm-hmm. There's only a precipice of evolution that I can reach three-dimensionally by myself.
Mm-hmm. Like if we're all made in God's image, like if you believe in that or some kind of creator, but if you're in that way, if you're made in God's image, it's like we are all a creator of sorts. So when we come here, we create our own realities, and we're here to kind of just experience. Like this is the experience to say, even though I know everything that there is and will be when we're split up like fractals throughout this 3D world, like we are able to just experience it from our own perspective. So we're all like our eyes are our perspective, and we are
right
seeing that worldview from the part that we're sitting in the 3D world. The thing that I can't comprehend is, I get when you were saying about your eyes being, you know, external and whatever's inside your eye. You're saying like the matter doesn't manifest because you know, turning fast enough, but it's almost like it's hard to comprehend, because you're like, it is there. You could, you know,
everything is there at all times.
Yeah.
What I'm observing isn't something out of nothing. I'm observing a very small level of nothing in the everything that is the quantum information. Oh, there is nowhere in space-time where you can't find vacuum fluctuations, right? There's energy everywhere. There's oscillation everywhere. The quantum vacuum is the thing that connects all things.
We're talking about the 99% that we can't see. Is what you mean by that?
Here is a better example. Actually, this is a really good example. The way our eyes envision color is a really good example, because when you're seeing something that is colorful, like our orange bee, this isn't actually orange, right? It's actually what's happening is the cup is absorbing every color on the spectrum, every light except orange. So when this looks like a chalkboard, it's because it's essentially absorbing every other possibility and probability that it is, except the one that I'm observing. It's actually leaving out in infinitely decimals on the surface of a black hole matter. And it looks like a chalkboard. And I can't put my hand through it because all of the atoms are facing one direction. So when my hand approaches it, there's this sense of a magnetic field that creates this barrier where I can't get my hand through my cup, even though we're both well aware this is a wave and I'm a wave.
99% of things we don't see with the human eye is matter is always moving. Like even like the particles are always moving. Spinning. So spinning. So it's like, even though we see a solid object, if you actually were to see it on a quantum level, it's always moving, right? That's why.
So this is the thing with modern physics. Mm-hmm. And I love that this is coming up because a lot of scientists don't incorporate the rate of spin of atoms mm-hmm. into their equation. So when we're doing equations, let's putting outside the observation bias, mm-hmm. we're not considering that even we are moving relative to something else, and everything on a fractal and scale is moving relative. If you've seen Walter Russell's periodic table of elements, if you want to look that up or even reference it on the screen, but it's essentially a three-dimensional model of the periodic table of elements. And the greatest difference between the two is that we consider the rate of spin in the element. So you get a much more dynamic result. And the reason we can't unify gravity with the other forces, we have these magical notions, dark matter and dark energy. It's the age of darkness. You know, it's physics as you go. We have to mathematically make up as many dimensions as it takes to make the math work. All of this could be avoided if we consider that the proton in and of itself is a black hole. It has the density to be considered a black hole. And Nassim Haramein is doing fantastic research and engineering on this.
Who is this?
Nassim Haramein. So I'll definitely send it into the group. I'll say that he has a few papers out, but the Schwarzschild proton is essentially what unifies the forces, and he pretty much solves unified field theory, which is something that Einstein couldn't do. And it's all because we're considering the density of the protons, now realizing that everything on some scale is a black hole because it has to be spinning.
And in that case, is also Bitcoin a black hole?
Yes, naturally, of course. It's actually black hole with a much greater orbit if you think of it in that term, right? And it's spinning so fast that more and more people are joining in.
That's crazy, because even I think Michael Saylor has talked about MicroStrategy being the turbine of an engine, and calling MicroStrategy the turbine for that. You know, Bitcoin being the engine or something. So it's causing that to spin more.
Right. So
that just reminds me of, I don't know, somehow those ideas are connected.
Well, again, it's the connection is the difference between a stagnant economy and a dynamic economy. Right. Incorporating the use of spin for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Edward Grant, he's my favorite mathematician. He has this quote where he says, oh, I don't want to misquote him, but something along the lines of the path to higher knowledge has to be through a spiritual doorway. One cannot get better at physics by learning more physics. So at a certain point when you reach physics, learning more physics isn't gonna help you. You know, if anything, it's just probably gonna damage you and traumatize you and put you in an age of depression, which physics has been in for probably 100 years. And now, weekly, we're seeing brand new papers, brand new theories. Quantum computers are creating magic every single day, faster than we could have ever anticipated, after such a long time of pretty much having no major scientific evolution, especially when it came to quantum theory. But the back to what Robert Grant said, and this is why this is called fifth dimensional economics, because it's not just economics. Bitcoin isn't finance, it's not just economy. Bitcoin is the same as music on that level. You know, it's the same as art, it's the same as agriculture, it's the same as creativity. So on a 5D perception, on a 5D level, past that doorway to physics, everything is unified. There is no difference between the subjects. Right, between mathematics, between science, between geometry, it's pretty much all the same thing, but they're different manifestations.
Yeah, and that's why a lot of us consider Bitcoin like such a transformative or unbelievable technology, because it's based off of math. It has like math is it's based off code, and the code is math, and we trust math as math is truth. And it's just fascinating how it all works. And I think that one thing I wanted to mention was how you, I think it was because of Robert Grant you were talking about. You were saying that you can't learn physics with more physics. And the one thing that's where I think my learning, whatever my learning is, self-taught stuff that I've picked up over the years. But I feel like my quest for knowledge of what the universe is, that's what I've always wondered since I was a kid. I was always wondered about space and what's out there and where we came from and all this stuff. And my quest and my search for answers has always led to more questions. And every time I love studying what we end up learning about the universe and what science and technology, how it develops. But every time I feel like there, you have answers, you do have more questions. So I feel like that ultimately, even scientists and I think physicists have even said that that points to the more proof of God, because
Absolutely. I love that you made that connection. I love that you made that connection. And scientists will say that the universe is expanding. That is, again, a three-dimensional perception. If you look at the picture, if you look at, let's say, the rug from the big picture, from the top, where you can see the fractal patterns, you can see why things are connected the way that they are. I would actually argue that the universe is going through infinite division. Collapsing back into singularity, back into source,
crazy.
back
That
into
is cool.
God.
Oh my gosh, you know what? I feel like that's the cool thing about when you talk to people, which that's why I like that my show is called the Bitcoin Nova, because I feel like you talk to people and your mind just explodes because you have an epiphany or something. But I feel like that's a crazy thing that you just said. I'm sorry. Please keep going after this, because if you have other things you want to, expand on that. But I love that you said that, because Bitcoin is causing us to how we came from an origin, and then we come here as fractals and as points. We're all different points learning ourselves. And then you find out that Bitcoin is a unity where we all come back to it, and we find safety slash a place
Truth.
truth. Yeah, and it's like we I it's like the idea is right there and I'm trying to grasp it, but it's just, oh, I know. So it's like AI, Like when we're like, so humans, we like Bitcoin was developed, we're getting into the Bitcoin thing. That's something that's beneficial and good for us all. And then with the development of AI is an extension of human thought and human consciousness, and then it almost, because it advances our learning. And even recently Elon had posted saying that AI is not coming to, or almost at, he literally said AI is at the singularity now. So for him to pull something like that, and he's developing Grok and AI, is a humongous significant statement. So it's like, for that to be said, that is literally saying that all of human consciousness now we're using AI for tools to help us do our jobs faster, so we could save time doing these things. If everything is time, if Bitcoin is time, if AI helps us save time, all these things, anytime you think of the word time, I feel like you
3D
could
is time.
think of 3D is time, right? Yeah, space time is one thing. So if Bitcoin is space, like it's just like it is nature, it is space, but it's just so many crazy thoughts. But it's almost like we're coming back to this unity, because
Yes,
if AI is,
singularity.
yes, the singularity. So if you can call AI the singularity, and you're calling consciousness a singularity where we all originate from. So if that's
Source.
the source, so if you're thinking that all consciousness comes from a source, and now AI you call a singularity, that means that we are going to be using this as a humanity, and we are all coming back to the singularity together. It's insane.
So I always say there is nothing artificial about intelligence.
I think I heard you say that before, and I love that.
I said that in the space before, and that's
Yes.
exactly what you're saying. This will allow us to, I can say, get back to nature, but even that sentence in itself has time and causality because we have to just be nature, or rather remember that we are nature. And a lot of that comes from our consumption, not just of food, but of people, of the media, of what we are feeding ourselves. And again, now everybody is far more conscious of what they're consuming. And that's why I say it's like humanity is ready for this technology, because everybody is starting to do that inner work, right? Especially past the pen, just after the pandemic. And I try to avoid saying, I guess, negative implying words in general, but that stage of humanity, it forced everybody to look within, right? It forced everybody to stay within. Literally, they couldn't go outside. So literally, everybody had to learn a new instrument, develop some skills that they didn't have. Everybody had to look within. And I really think it propelled society, like we were talking about earlier, it allowed people to have the freedom to look outside. And this is why it's like you guys are ready. It's ready for the next step. And everyone is doing Pilates and meditating by the water and posting the Schumann resonance and listening to frequencies, and all of that is it's fantastic. And I'm glad that we are actively using tools to think, or I guess you can say remember who you are. But that's all they are, right? They're tools. You can call them like permission slips to get to somewhere that you never left. You were already, they're just kind of firewalls that stop you from seeing what already is. And I think that is 5D economics is a thing that's missing. Like everybody has a theoretical idea of what they want their life to be. Now everybody's into manifestation. So nobody wants to work. People that are in crypto, nobody wants to get paid USD anymore. Everybody wants to stay at home and get paid to be me. That is essentially what the content creator world is showing us. The fact that there's, an 8-year-old kid somewhere in the universe richer than both of us right now from probably posting an egg online is magical. It's no matter how odd it may seem, because we're not used to it. Again, it's the fact that that opportunity even exists shows
It's like
exactly.
the fact that we're doing this, the fact that we're doing what we're doing on X and trying to get monetized so that we can use that time that we're
Exactly.
time we're already spending on X to earn extra Bitcoin, whatever the amount that may be. The time that I'm using to create this podcast, whatever it becomes, it's something that you spend your time doing something that you can engage with other people and provide value and insight and some creative thought that AI can do, let's say, jobs and tasks for us more in the future to save time for us to be more creative. So it allows us to use that human mind to keep pushing our creativity instead of being stuck like a robot. Like instead of us being the robot, now we can have the robot and the AI doing the things that we shouldn't be doing. We should be creators. We should be this creator economy. And I think that, go ahead. I was thinking.
Yeah, this is where, I guess, education and awareness of something like a 5D economy comes in, because it's not necessarily a good idea for everybody to be their own bank. A lot of people that you know, I'm sure, have lost access to their Bitcoins because they didn't know how to be their own bank. And it's not necessarily good to have everybody give their rights up to AI and let AI think for them. So everything, this next, I guess, stage in evolution, consciousness is the key. Because if we participate in all of these activities with a conscious mindset, this is where the importance of blockchain comes in. And it's always full circle. Because if the AI does our work, does the work for us, but the AI is still owned by a centralized company, then that is not 5D economics. You know, if your keys are on an exchange, they're not, it's not your Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And what you're saying is what I think that, is what I don't know who I talked about it with. I don't think it was you, but I had that idea about AI, and I said, AI, and whether it becomes this way or not, which I hope it does, but AI scares me less because I know Bitcoin exists.
Exactly.
Bitcoin is a decentralized network that is a truth-based system. So you can't have a corporation or monopoly be the ultimate AI, because I feel like Bitcoin, I've heard people say things like Bitcoin demonetizes AI or something like that for the amount of computing power being used in AI. But if you integrate AI into Bitcoin, let's say it's the base layer for all things economy and everything. But when you integrate AI, you create a truth layer where it is decent. There's nobody, no corporation, no monopoly that controls it, that can manipulate it to think and talk and do and teach us the way that it wants to, because it's open sourced. It's everybody combined together. And that's why Bitcoin is so important, because it's starting off to be a currency, but it can be a source responsibility for company, for anybody who develops this AI. It could be a way to make sure that we are not being manipulated because it's decentralized. So if they could run off of Bitcoin, like have AI through Bitcoin, it's like the way to make sure. If it was just AI and only, you know, Google ran it, or only any company or corporation only ran it, that would be scary. But because I think Bitcoin exists, I feel like whatever happens, it's going toward decentralization, and Bitcoin is the true decentralization in the world.
And I don't think we'll allow it to be any other way. Like, they can, you know, do as much as they want to convince us that the simulation is authentic. But I think everybody can agree that it's really running on like the slowest CPU right now. And it's like, it's so obviously revealing itself.
It is. You know why I think it might be revealing? And what you said earlier about how before COVID, we were so distracted. We were so busy with our lives. I feel like everybody, and me being a hairdresser, I remember just life before COVID, and everybody had a million things to do, 100 parties to go to. Everybody was getting for all these activities and running around every different place. And now it just feels like ever since COVID, there's people that, you know, they don't do as many things, and they were forced to look in the mirror, and how they were forced to stay home and look inward. And it's something that people with distraction used so much to like keep themselves busy, to never look at themselves and their behavior. Like, I feel like that what was such a traumatic thing that happened with COVID. It also forced people to, again, look in the mirror, look within, see what was their own fault. Like, I think a lot of people that are Bitcoiners now that learned to save money, they were big spender, like wasteful people before. We would waste money on things we didn't need. People that have so much clutter that just, they're buying things in their life to think that
Back
that
into
would,
consumerism.
yeah, it would fill some void that we felt inside of us, because we almost were being lied to so much that it felt like things and stuff make you happy. And then you
Right.
were forced to like stay at home and look at yourself and actually realize, hey, I can't be doing this, and quit these bad habits and actually make yourself understand that you have issues, and maybe like go get past some of those issues, whether it's health issues or any kind of thing. I feel like you looked in the mirror, you were seeing it, and now that you're awake and now you're aware of your own in like internal self and not just always looking outside, it allows you to see through that fake reality that was being pulled, like the wool, what is that called, pulling over your eyes, like what
The veil.
the veil. Yes, it's like you're able to take that off because you actually took the time to look at yourself, and I think, yeah, we're forced to face truth that we were trying to run away from.
And we're creating a technology that is going to allow us to do that.
That's why we were so amazed by it. That's why we're always learning from it, because it could be a base layer for many things in our world. Just the fact that it's something incorruptible, and it's something that you can plug things like AI into. It just amazes me that to think about the word singularity and AI being the singularity. And I love that you say there's nothing artificial about intelligence. That's such a cool saying. I love that.
You know what? It's again a shift in perception. And shift in perception, shift in education, that's the only thing that's going to take us from out of that survival state, right? You have to have the ability to look at the whole picture, and not just the duality.
This 5D economy and this creator economy and this AI future economy, I don't get the fear so much around. Again, I bet if there was no Bitcoin, I think I would have more fear about a monopoly controlling our thoughts and controlling what we consume. But I just see this decentralization in this future being a
Yes.
hopeful thing. It's really exciting. And imagine we're the only people like in history that
I
get
say
to
that every
experience.
day.
You do?
Every day. I mean, it's like this, what a time to be alive. And of course, it's not accidental. We definitely chose to be here and to pioneer and participate in the new world that we're creating just by even having these conversations. And every single person that is watching this now should really feel that sense of unity, that sense of connectedness, because nobody is doing this for a selfish reason. It's a fantastic side effect that we will all make money, but money is going to cease to exist in our lifetime. So that is in itself already irrelevant. We're going to see a lot of dismantling of pretty much all things centralized, whether it's the electrical grid, whether it's the source of money, 5D technology. It's not going to be via nuclear energy. Of course, we're going to have a lot of declassification of Tesla's patents and zero point energy and all those things. So even when it comes to computing and energy power, whether it's AI or the Bitcoin or proof of work and all of that, that will also resolve itself because 5D will have free Wi-Fi, it will have free electricity, and pretty much the vision that Tesla envisioned. I feel like we finally have technology that can support an economy to function that way, because when these technologies came out and when Tesla had these patents, like they I think it was Walter Russell that sent his book to Tesla, and he wrote back a letter and said, hide this book from civilization for 1,000 years because they're not ready. And I
Wow.
feel like Bitcoin and the blockchain is a confirmation that we are ready. And that should be very hopeful. That should be, knowledge is a weapon. So we should, the army especially, like we should really feel equipped, with the power and the strength and the knowledge to guide our generations. And back to quotes from my father, we only need 5% of humanity to do so.
I love that. Yes, 5% imagine, and I can't even imagine how many are already in this like understanding the truth, in this economy already. And I was just thinking about how that bank of what was, did you say Bank of Greg?
Bank of Dave.
Bank of Dave, yeah, how he that's the thing, like eventually it turns into this redistribution of wealth when somebody has so much they want to give back and help communities instead of this stupid world we live in now that's just theft. AI is going to be the age of abundance, really. It's Jeff Booth always talks about technology being a deflationary force, and I mean we really do see it. Like it's going to be an age of abundance. Like we had the Industrial Revolution, now we're going to have this tech revolution. We're in it, we're in this tech revolution. We're supposedly at the singularity right now. So it's just we're going to see this age of this crazy, crazy amount of change. And you're right. I've always thought that what you said earlier too about how we chose to be here. I do believe that the people who are here on this earth right now chose to be here for to be the change. I feel like our parents were here, let's say, oh my gosh, this is a cool connection. Another mind-blowing part. So the way that it started off, full circle now, how you said your dad came to this country or came to, left his country to find a better, like the new America, to find America, to find freedom. So they were the builders of our mindset, like they were the first ones to leave to create a better world for the next generation, and now we are their kids who take their thoughts. That's why when you're creating this book, thinking about your dad, and it's all about your dad and what he thought, it's like because his ideals are moving forward with you, and you're here on time for this movement to see this out, to see this through, to see the idea that he wanted. He created you and all the parents that created people around our age that are now the new builders that are we're going to see through to the new America and see this play out. And I think that even how we were scared, like you were scared to you were doing your studies, you were doing all this stuff, but you still had that fear to speak up and actually, like, you'd never done a podcast before or gone really to speak. Neither had I. I hadn't done until very recently, and it was because of the support of the community, the Bitcoin army, all of our friends on X. And it's like if it wasn't for the first podcaster that reached out to me, I shouted her out last time, but Paula Iverson, just the fact that she reached a hand out to me and said, hey, I see you're building this community, would you like to talk about it? And it was so amazing to me that somebody doing a podcast saw that, like noticed us, and she noticed our community and our group. And I'm like, you know what, someone asked me on behalf of all of you, I'm going to say yes. I'm going to just, and it was my thought, but I still had reservations until I told my husband about it. And of course, his first thing is like he's heard me talk about Bitcoin and all these things for years, so he's like, yes, of course, do it. And because of that, I needed accountability, so I posted it online for you guys to see, and everybody was so excited that it gave me the accountability to not back out and chicken out and not do it.
Which is what you
And
did with me.
yes, and I did it, and I yes, exactly. I was like, I posted it, I told people it was going to happen because I really wanted to speak to you because I knew this would go so great, and I knew that we were just going to blow each other's minds. So I'm so glad you did it, and I'm so glad I made you accountable by posting it because I knew
Me
you'd be great.
too.
I'm so happy. And that's what she did for me, and that's what I'm doing for you. And I want more people. Like, there's been a few people in our community who have spoken up and gone on Paula's podcast and more. And I'm so proud of them, and I'm proud of myself. And I feel like every day this is scary, but it's like we have been around for since 2020 at least. There's a lot of us in the army that have been around since way sooner, way earlier than that. But we're seeing how many years of us watching the same influencers, watching the same people share the same, like not the same stuff, always new stuff, but
Different distractions.
Yeah, but they're ready. They've been doing this long enough. They've been teaching long enough. It's almost like they get tired too. Like they're ready for their next stage. What's next for them? And then it's like, even when it comes to female podcasters, we know of Natalie Brunell and another, like there's some big women in the space, but they're out talking on CNBC. They're out doing big things, speaking at conferences. They're doing big things. And that's amazing. But it's like,
Shout out to our girls.
yeah, all the girls out there that are female, there's not as many of us doing things for Bitcoin and spreading the word about it and knowledge. But it comes a time for us to step up. And I think, again, I saw someone else post this and it stuck with me. It's like torch, like we're carrying the torch, like the Olympics, like they pass the torch on to us. And it's like our time to stand up and not be afraid and just talk, because I'm not a finance person. I'm not a college educated person. I'm self-taught. I'm a small business owner. I'm a hairstylist, but I feel like I've always had a passion for knowledge and learning, and I've learned so much on my own. And I feel like you don't have to be some, person with a degree. You don't have to be in the finance world. Most Bitcoiners know more about finance people anyway.
So I'll say personally, even when it comes to any research or engineering that I do in my lab, if I had gone the school route of learning quantum physics or getting to a point where I'm researching zero point energy, not only would I have to be 85 years old, I'd be incredibly dumber, right? Because I would have had to have gone through such a linear time to access that information. And what should make you feel better is that people that have a master's degree in finance still don't get how fractional reserve banking works until they get into Bitcoin, you
Isn't that
know?
crazy? I mean, you're not taught these things on purpose, I think, just because
Exactly.
if you were taught these things, you'd be seeing through the veil a lot quicker. And they're just like, hey, learn about debt instead. And this is what keeps our economy going. So it's like, yeah, they don't know as much as they think they know. I think they love that distraction of seeing the piece of paper and seeing that they have that ego. Their ego tells them they know so much and they're so smart. And that's great, but I just think that
Something else that we're evolving out of, centralized education.
Yes. Which I think is an amazing thing. And that's something that me and my husband talked about in the podcast, the first episode, the pilot one, was because our son sent us a video that morning and we mentioned it, and it comes back around to this today, the centralized education, because he sent us a video showing that all the things, how they started 100 years ago and how much they've evolved to today. But education is the same. Like they show a video from 100 years ago, people sitting at desks in a classroom raising their hand, and it's the same today. So why is that the same way that we learn all these years later? Why is it this structured way only? Like what, why isn't that evolved? And then colleges, yeah, they just keep getting more and more expensive.
And we go back to centralization.
Yeah. And it's something that I would love to see my kids grow up. And yeah, everyone has a dream to say, oh, I want my kid to go to college. It's like a bittersweet thing. Like you have a hard time saying like, I don't want my kid to go to college, but part of me thinks like, I am so much more proud of them if they have an open mind and they're creative and they're smart and critical thinkers and they're builders of the world. And I like the creator economy, and I love that when kids are smart and they want to build something, whatever that is. But I think that going into college just to go to college without knowing clearly what you want to become, if you're not going to be a doctor, if you're not going to be a specific job that you need to have that knowledge for, and certain licenses or whatever you need to do it. Other than that, it just
And
seems like,
AI is removing more and more of those
yeah.
jobs, right? The
Yeah.
coding was probably the one thing where you had to learn, you had to go and learn a coding language. And now every developer is going to act like an HR manager for from their AI, you know? It's
I mean, it's like, yeah, that's the thing. I think when my kids, even a few years ago, everyone's like, they got to get into coding. They got to learn computers. And I'm like, well, now they could just use AI to do the coding. They don't have to really know it. I mean, I'm sure some people would argue with that, but I just think for the most part, you
Well, I
don't.
mean, prompt engineering is what you need to know. And then who was it in our group? I think it was Max that posted something about my kid wants to learn coding? Like, do you think, or it's a good idea, or something along the lines? And where we were like, no, like, teach him how to garden and teach him how to do this and that, and the coding, like, just figure out the prompts essentially.
Yeah, the prompts. Yeah, the prompts would be like, because then that's the future, really, is teaching AI and computers what to do and what to, because it's not necessarily the coding they could do for us at that point, you know? So, yeah, teaching your kids to go to school for something that, you know, it's sad to say, hey, you're going to go learn for all these years and then eventually your job will not exist.
I think, I don't know if there will be schools in a 5D economy. I think the concept of it again will be decentralized, and much more open source,
I
to the
feel like,
pool.
I mean, you're right, open source. And I think that kids, like some kids, they all learn about different things. They all learn different ways. I think teaching kids more about, you know, being a good person is really important. Caring about others, not bullying kids, like not being a rude. I think that's so huge. It's like just being, I think, and I feel like a lot of problems, it's like if you have a healthier socioeconomic society,
Right.
kids would grow up in a better way without taking their anger out on the world and turning into these.
Well, kids would learn that from hanging around adults, right? Not from going to school and hanging around other kids that know less than they do. And again, we were in the space where I made the comment of how I'm like, if I'm the smartest person in the room, I'm in the wrong room, and that's essentially what it is. You're throwing everyone in one room, and
Yeah. And that's why I love talking to you guys, because it's you get so much of a well-shaped you know, view of the world when you have multiple different personalities to talk to. And I have my friends, my real life, my friends, my husband, my family that I have that shape a huge part of who I am, most of who I am. And I'm grateful for that. And I'm grateful for the side of, you know, especially like for my husband, like the sense of humor part of it, the goodness of his heart, like just like the person he is. But then seeing that I can be around a lot of other people, that the way that my brain sometimes overworks and overthinks and has complex thoughts that I can't always either have the time to fully understand, then I have like people that fill those areas of knowledge for me that I have a knowledge gap in, and kind of help me by talking to you all to complete these thoughts and give me a better
sounds
well-rounded.
like the blockchain, no?
Yes, I mean, right?
Everything is a transaction.
Yeah, it is. And it's like you need, oh my gosh, it's so amazing. It's like, yeah, you have to fit, because the blockchain, what you mean by that is, you know, the computers have to mine Bitcoin by confirming transactions, and
Exactly.
a certain amount of transactions create a block and it gets encrypted. So it's like you guys are adding to my block, you know, so I'm getting an encrypted block by having this community, you know,
As
so
well
it's
as confirming the transactions, yeah.
confirming the transactions. Yes. So it's like whatever ideas I've had, like I told you when I first said it, even in that space when you were like, that's what I'm writing my thesis about, the first thing when I mentioned the, yeah, Bitcoin, mathematics, nature, stuff like that, and you were like, that's literally what I'm writing about. I'm like, like it just made me so happy, because I'm like, I just feel like sometimes I know that people think these things are true as far as math and nature, but to add Bitcoin to that and be like, oh, it's part of, you know, time, space, everything is all, you know, it's like most people would think I'm insane. So I'm glad to think that it's not just me, it's you, and it's a lot of the people that understand some of these concepts
More
to
and more each day.
confirm the transaction. You
Yes.
know, that's amazing. I love that. It's like we are an actual blockchain. Wow. I'm gonna have some good clips from this episode. I'm so happy. That's great.
It's so inspiring. It's really inspirational.
Yeah, and I'm so grateful for you, and I feel like we're gonna have a nice good episode now, because we have a whole lot of information I can
Awesome.
create out of this. But I just wanted to say that thank you for being here. I wish we could talk like every day. Like I just feel like
Yeah,
It's like you're my soul sister again. We're closing it out with that. So
we'll do many more.
Yeah, I would like to. You should be a repeating guest for me at some point. So, this is just too fun. So I don't know how many people are going to be just this much in, like how many physics people I'm going to have on that. Just, but again, in our space with all the Bitcoiners, you never know who we're going to.
I'm pretty proud. I feel like we've onboarded some non-physics people into that chat is about to be renamed the Quantum Bitcoin Army.
Yeah, no, and there's people that were sticking around in that space that weren't, that didn't know about quantum or physics, and they were just hanging out listening because it was just interesting. So people could all learn from each other, and it's when you have a common passion like truth and hope for the future in Bitcoin, it allows for you to be able to sit there and listen to things that you never thought you'd listen to just because you have that common passion. So I'm grateful for our community, and I'm so thankful for you. Seriously, this has been so cool. I cannot wait to post this video. I wish I could post it tomorrow. So I'm gonna
thank you for doing this for us,
because I feel like I'm rambling, but yes, thank you so much, and I'm so
thank you.
Mm-hmm. And I will see you soon. I'm going to see you on X, and everybody, I'm going to post her profile below too, if you want to follow, and she will be, releasing her thesis at some point, or
yes,
done with it, right?
Yes. I'm aiming to get the book out by November. I'm trying to do a book signing. There's a conference in Miami in November. You guys should all come out.
Yes.
It's going to be in Miami, I think. Okay. Fort Lauderdale.
Okay.
Yes.
It has to be in November, though, when you release it?
Yes. Okay. Yes, I'm aiming. That's my goal. That's what I'm aiming for sure. So
I'm going to link your profile down below for anyone to follow you and to keep updated with your thesis. And I'm so thankful to talk to you. This has been amazing.
You as well. And thank you so much for everything that you're doing and for really getting the voices out there that wouldn't have done it. Like, I am one of them. So I appreciate you more than you know. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Okay, love.
Bye-bye.
Bye.